Hi, everyone. Russ Thomas here from RST Coaching Academy. Welcome to a new episode of Money Talks, where we talk about money and how to make more of it. Hello, everybody out there in internet land. Here's Russ from RST Coaching Academy, sponsor of Money Talks, on the podcast, on my video blog, on YouTube. We're in a lot of different places. If you go to my website, rstcoachingacademy.com, you'll see a list of places where we're at. But nevertheless, it's a new day here in Daytona Beach. A pleasant day. It's not too terribly hot, thank God. But anyway, we're going to interview a new friend of mine. His name is Larry from the Sacramento, California area. And this fella has been a student of businesses, as have I. But this fella has been a student of businesses to figure out what makes them fail. And that's an interesting topic, because I think if you can find out what makes them fail, then the converse of that should be helpful to know the opposite, and maybe it's going to help the business to succeed. Larry holds the answer to that question, to that concept. So, well, let's turn it over to Larry, and I want to just ask you, Larry, to tell us your background. Give us your background. You've got a couple of years on you, not as many as me, but you've been around the block. And so you've come from somewhere. You've been in the business world for a while. Tell us about that, how you got into this thing that's taken you 23 years to do this study on why businesses fail. Okay, so take it away.
Thanks, Russ. I appreciate it. I like to start by telling people that I have about 170 years of experience. And that comes from being fifth generation in a family-owned business that was subscribed to the belief of pay it forward from day one. We started in the mid-1850s in hides and furs. And over the next 180, 100 and whatever years, the organization evolved into many different things, ultimately dealing with automobile and agricultural machinery, primarily motors. So the last entity that we had, and I still own the corporation, but I've sold that business, was actually an auto parts store and machine shop. And that's important because as part of that evolution, we also had some automobile dealerships and we had some agricultural dealerships. And when I was very young, in my early teens, my dad said to me, "I don't understand how we went from no automobile manufacturers to 300 automobile manufacturers and down to three in just 20 or 30 years. How does that happen?" And while he wasn't actually correct with his details, he was close. And the problem was, as a teenager, I really didn't care. But I was fascinated by why any business would fail. Not why automobile manufacturers would fail, but why does any business fail? And that began my pursuit of the answer to the question, why do businesses fail? And I'll tell you, Russ, that question and what arose out of that question has kind of been the fabric of my life. I have owned more than a dozen businesses in more than five different industries. I've never worked for a company that I didn't own, except in college. Done turnarounds, mergers, acquisitions, startups. And I've been very blessed with experiencing business suicide personally and surviving it. So I have a pretty robust viewpoint on all of this.
That background, so some of those businesses didn't make the grade? Some of them failed, are you saying?
Couple of them, and one of them in particular, boy, did I give it the death knell. That was a real good job of killing something for me. But you learn, right? You
go through these. Hopefully. Things.
So, I'm sorry, was there, did you want me to say something else about that?
No, just hopefully that you learn and
Oh,
can
yeah.
take what you've learned and reapply it to something that lasts a little longer.
Right. Well, and you know, that's kind of the impetus behind the book. I know it's corny. I think as we get older, most of my friends and I feel like, what am I doing here? Why am I here? And I feel like I need to have some kind of purpose, right? I have a life. I've been blessed with this life, and I want to have a purpose. And I feel like I really have two purposes here. And one is to improve education, because I think education is a real problem. And I think if a business person doesn't support education, then they shouldn't be allowed to be in business. I think it's just as much of a fiduciary responsibility to support education as it is to be financially responsible. And the other is that there's so many people whose lives depend on businesses being successful. So much of our lives are wrapped up in business and in a job or in employees, that if I can help businesses be more successful, then by successful, what I mean is to create sustainable, profitable growth.
Right.
And if I can make it so that everybody that wants a job has one and loves it, and that every employer treats their employees with respect and appreciates them, the world will be a better place.
Oh, yeah.
So for me, that's what all this, that's the end game to all this.
Got it. Got it. So that put you on your mission to figure this all out. Why a business fails, and therefore how to keep the business from failing.
Correct.
Now you're improving education. I wrote a note on here previously. I interviewed a lady earlier this afternoon that is working with a local college here in the Daytona Beach area. And she said that they have a course of study on entrepreneurialism. And I said, man, when I was in college, I graduated in 1970, a few years ago. I don't know if I'd ever even heard the word entrepreneurial. I can't even hardly say the word, but it was just like it was an unknown thing. And now they've got finally some classes. But so honestly, I don't know how in depth that they're going into that area of study, but at least they're trying, wouldn't you agree? And trying to put
Well,
something out there to help people get a start, maybe some basics and principles.
absolutely. You bring up an interesting point, and I do want to make sure we get to how your viewers and listeners can make more money, and I promise we'll get there. One of the things that I have done is I've served on the board of directors of an organization called the Sacramento Entrepreneurship Academy. It was one of the first three entrepreneurship programs for college level students ever made in this country.
And
So
that
they were, we were,
started when?
gosh, 30, 35 years ago.
Okay, all right.
I'm guessing, I don't remember. I haven't been involved with them for about 25 years, but I was on the board 20, 25 years ago, and it's a program that's designed for undergraduate students to, and it's a 1 year program to, and it's, they pay for it. You have to be accepted. It's kind of like med school. You have to apply, and it's hard to get into. And what they do is they take you through the process of conceptualizing a business, building the business, marketing the business, and then eventually selling the business, right?
Okay.
So there's an exit strategy built in. And I was actually one of the, while I was on the board, I was also one of the instructors. I taught for quite some time. I was the second week. The first week was the introduction to the program. The second week was how do you build teams? And one of the things people don't understand is that with entrepreneurs, they're very driven, self-motivated idealists. So trying to get three or four or five entrepreneurs together to work as a team four of them have to subjugate their wants.
Yeah. Who's
So what I
the
did,
boss?
yeah. So what I did was I taught them how to do that. That was the second class of the year. And I always told them the same thing. Entrepreneurship is a non-fatal, incurable disease. And like all diseases, all uncurable diseases, it has to be properly managed or it will harm you. And before, at the beginning, they all looked at me like, this guy's crazy. What's he telling us? And by the end of the year, they all understood.
Yeah.
It's something that is, it's in your blood. You can't help it.
I know. I'm developing a talk basically about my story and incorporating that into what I do to help people in sales and coaching and so on and so forth. And the start of it is like many of you, I have an addiction. I'm addicted to business. And I've called myself many times a hopeless entrepreneur, that it's in the blood, you know. Mine started in 1973 when I bought my first gas station and has progressed on from there for, 50 years. And I don't want to get delivered from that addiction because I love it. You know, I believe, and I'm sure you do too, that love and business make the world go round, and ultimately sales makes business go around and economies go around. So yeah, that's really cool that you took it from that and you were teaching these students this. How, and this was no doubt in the School of Business at the university.
They weren't required to be because it wasn't connected to a university. It was an
Oh,
independent academy.
I see.
So we recruited from every college in Northern California.
Okay.
And most of the students that we had were either business students or finance students. We had a
Okay.
lot of students who came from the world of finance.
Was it well attended?
We always had more student applications than we had room
All
for
right.
students. So,
Well,
yeah.
that's encouraging. And so, do you have a feel from back then as to what percentage of the graduates of that course of study actually went on to start, own, and operate their own business?
So that's really a good question. Absolutely. Two-thirds of the alums have started their own business. And about a third of that two-thirds or a sixth have actually become extremely successful in their own businesses. One of the students, and of course, as you go through this, we had our class sizes were our cohorts were 30 students. And we put them all into groups of four, three, four, or five. You had to have a team. You had to work together. Because in a business, you got to work as a team. You can't be a solo shot. And we had mentors. So I was also a mentor for one of the teams. And at the end of the course, we had a number of awards like best business plan, most likely to succeed, most creative, most desirable for venture acquisition. And one of the teams in the last year I did that won every single award. And the leader of that team has since become a very good friend of mine. And he, in fact, became the youngest plant manager for ConAgra in the history of the company by 20 years. He was the youngest plant manager by over 20 years. And today to me, he's a young man. He's now the C he's been in a senior level position his whole life. Today he's the CEO of a regional baking company that provides baked goods all over the Western US. So we have an incredible track record of success at this academy.
But this fella here, he went on to work for some big corporation. So what did all this entrepreneurial training do for him to help him in his career working for somebody else?
Right. So, as in the case with all diseases, there are varying degrees of intensity. And his intensity of his entrepreneurial illness was what I would call mild. So, what he wanted was freedom to do his own thing, but he didn't have the risk tolerance. So, he looked for ways that he could be in a leadership role and have autonomy, but not total accountability. Hence, a plant manager, hence, a CEO for a company driven by a board of directors. And that gave him that ability to be entrepreneurial in a what I'll call a gated community, right? So he had some protection and it served his need.
That's a great answer. That's really cool.
That's it's not it's just fact. It's it's like I talk about this book, Russ. It's interesting because people say, gosh, Larry, that's just brilliant. How did you come up with that? And the answer is very, very simple. I didn't. I did research. I did qualitative and quantitative research with statistically valid sample sets of a very specific demographic. I spent 23 years gathering data, analyzing it, and extracting the details behind a hypothesis. That I then ran through a construct to validate it and ended up with a theory. And that's what this book is about, is the theory and how to apply it so that your business can create sustainable, profitable growth using leading non-financial indicators.
Wow. 23 years worth. And this was a study of why businesses fail. So therefore, you studied a bunch of failures, failed
Well,
businesses.
that's a good question. I studied a bunch of businesses that were on the verge of failing. Most of them did not. Many of them did. And let me give you another little truism that I believe. There were four demographic criteria. I mean, you can't study every business in the world. It's just too many. So you have to focus. It's like anything else. If you don't have focus on your target, you're just all over the place. So there were four demographic criteria. One of them was that they have to have a desire for sustainability, generational sustainability beyond the current leadership. One of them was more than one layer of management. So solopreneurs, right? A company where everybody reports to one person, that's not my target. I'm looking for layers of management. The third one was, and this is an important one, no primary sources of revenue from retail activities. And the
So
fourth one was
non-retail, basically.
non-retail. And the fourth one was autonomy. They had to have the ability to make decisions that were in the best interest of the business and its customers, not outside interested parties.
Like
So,
new board of directors or something like that, correct?
or publicly traded companies or absentee owners, right? So,
Hit
that
me up with
was,
the, go ahead.
that's okay, go ahead.
Well, number three, non-retail.
Yes.
So they had to sell something because every
Yes.
business needs to sell something.
Right.
But your target here was non-retail,
Right.
which means they were was it wholesale or
Well,
other facets?
let me just give you some examples. I never worked with a men's clothing store, but I worked with the corporate headquarters of a men's clothing store corporation. So I never dealt with the stores, but I dealt with corporate headquarters. I never worked with people who sold plastic. But I worked with companies that bought plastic for manufacturers and distributed it to other companies who used it for manufacturing processes. Right? So you think about insurance, right? Insurance, you can sell insurance to individuals, but businesses need insurance too. So that's a non-retail sale. That's a sale of a product or a service to an organization that's using it, but that's not that organization's primary business. So the saying that I have is that in retail, the customer is always right. In wholesale, the customer is always wrong. And this goes back to your question about they were failed businesses. Well, no, everybody thought they know what the problem was, and everybody was wrong. Business people have this blind spot to seeing the root cause of something that's happening. And they're always playing that whack-a-mole game. Have you ever seen that? It's a game
Hitting
where
the
you've
thing,
got like
coming up, whacking
10
it.
holes and you try and hit them with a hammer and doesn't matter. They keep popping up. It's like we try to fix the problem and it didn't go away. Then we did this and it didn't fix it. We did that and it didn't fix it. We did that and it didn't fix it. It's because they're attacking symptoms. They're not attacking core issues. So I would go in and I would talk to them and I would find out what was going on and they would talk about the problems they were having. And because of our conversations, I was able to help them reframe their perspective and help them understand that what they were looking at wasn't the problem. So without actually selling that as a service, through my research, I was helping them figure out what they needed to do to really survive. So most of the ones I spoke to survived. Several of them did not.
So while you were gathering information for what ultimately became this book, you were actually consulting or coaching them to help them avoid the path that they were doomed to follow
Correct.
with
And
a
it
good
wasn't,
success rate.
right. And it wasn't actually formal because I was a business owner. So what I was doing was talking to other business owners as a business owner and saying, tell me what's going on with your business. So it was a non-threatening, penalty-free environment where people, where I could talk to other business owners about the nuances of my business, the nuance of their business, and get to understand it and just have these pleasant conversations and say, what are you doing? And why are you doing it? And what's your problem? And how are you dealing with it? And have you ever thought about this? And what about trying that? And you know, it was a very non-threatening way to go get data. And as a disclaimer, this was not what you would typically call academically rigorous research, but it was formal research. And it was statistically valid. So it's a kind of a niche form of primary research.
Got it. How many companies would you say that you actually interviewed?
It was about 103 companies, and it was 250, little over 250 executives within the top three tiers of management.
Did you get any flack from people, resistance to your probing them of
Oh,
the operation of their business, and
absolutely.
how did you overcome those things?
Well, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him think. When people are resistant or reluctant, there's just no point in fighting that battle. You can have intelligent conversations and you can be honest and transparent, and if people just aren't willing or interested in being open and honest with you, you move on to the next person.
Okay.
And you know, so there's this theme that I love that originated in sales, but for me, it works pretty much everywhere in life. And it's the concept of get to know fast. Now, when I say no, I mean NO, not KNOW. Get to no as fast as you can. Because I don't want to waste time on people who don't want to participate, whatever it is I'm doing. So my goal is always to figure out how to get to know as fast as possible with the assumption that people are generally resistant. And if they're not, we're done. We're moving, baby. So I just walk away. I just say, that's okay. I'm
Right.
not trying to tell you what to do with your business. You don't want to talk about it? That's fine. Let's talk about something else. How's the weather?
Right.
Which is why it took so long.
Well, people are, they're not teachable, they're not teachable.
Right.
And sometimes, stupidity just doesn't hurt bad enough to get a person to change, and maybe that business had to go a little farther downhill before the management, whatever, would open up and or wake up and say, I need help. Who can help me? What can you do? So anyway,
Well, and
that's really
as I said,
cool.
Russ, several of them actually did fail. I mean, there are people who can refuse to listen and fail and learn from it. And then there's those people who refuse to listen and don't ever stop failing. Right? The world is full of all kinds.
People, you need to be open-minded, willing to change, willing to heed sound wisdom and advice, and then be willing to make the change necessary to incorporate that advice. Otherwise, you're probably going to end up stymied somewhere along the way. Now, Larry, I think it sounded to me like a lot of these companies were kind of just, they were autonomous, but there was no accountability, perhaps, beyond their own little inner core. And it sounds to me like there was definitely a need for a doctor, an outside physician, to come in and do some probing and testing and figure out what was going on, because they weren't able to figure out themselves. I think you mentioned narrow-mindedness before, and that's a killer in business. And we've always done it this way before, that kind of mentality. And somebody like you or me going into a business and say, well, consider this. Why don't you do it this way? Huh? Gee, never thought about that. An eye opener if the people are willing to listen, right?
It's an interesting point you bring up. And one of the disciplines that I learned as part of the Entrepreneurship Academy was the theory of corporate life cycles. And most people that I know haven't heard about this. It was developed in the 80s and popularized in the 90s, and it hasn't really been very well promoted ever since. But corporate life cycle theory is the study of how organizations grow and die. And there's about a half a dozen theorists in the world. And the guy that I like the best that I subscribe to, his name is Adizes, Adizes. He wrote a book called How and Why Corporations Grow and Die and What to Do About It. And I think his how and why is brilliant. I think his what to do about it is 40 years too late. I think he's completely wrong. And I know him and I've spoken to him many times and I love and respect him. But it's important to understand that organizations live in an environment that is in constant motion, perpetual motion. The world never stops changing. Business wants stasis. Business wants stability. Business wants no change. So there's an eternal friction that exists for every single organization, whether it's for profit, not for profit, or government agency, where they want stability and consistency, and the world won't accommodate them. So the reason I mentioned Adizes and corporate life cycle theory is because Adizes has this quote that I use all the time. He says, organizations go through stages that cause change that cannot often be fixed or dealt with without external help. So there's a natural need for somebody outside the bubble to help the people inside the bubble just to survive, And that's just natural. It's normal. If that doesn't exist, something's unnatural, something's dysfunctional, right? So one of the things that I found was that, first of all, nothing ever goes wrong until change happens. Problem is, when does change ever stop? So it's about avoiding being hit by the bus of change. The next thing I'll tell you is that no business ever failed due to financial reasons. Financials are nothing more than lagging indicators of prior bad decisions. Okay? It has nothing to do with money. It has to do with the decision. And the last thing I'll tell you that I came out of this with was every single business failure is the sole responsibility of the leadership. And I don't care about natural disasters. I don't care about COVID. I don't care about the depression. There are companies that survived and thrived through those disasters. The right leadership knows how to deal with those things. They're just another form of change. And this model that I created, what it does is it creates dramatic resilience in the organization. So let me explain this change thing for a minute. I don't mean to ramble, but I think your listeners will find this very valuable because this speaks to how do we create positive morale and keep moving forward if we're doing something good so we can keep making more money, right? Every time I give a group presentation, I always open by asking the audience, how many of you, generally speaking, think people like change? And of course, almost nobody raises their hand. The larger the audience, every once in a while, we get a few hands, but pretty much nobody raises their hand. And then I say, how many of you, generally speaking, think people don't like change? And of course, everybody's hand shoots up, at which point I say, well, you're all wrong. Every single human being on the planet loves change. You're absolutely wrong. What you don't understand is the type of change they like, because everybody loves the type of change they do unto others. Nobody likes the change others do unto them. So what this model does that I've developed and is outlined in the book, it's a very much of a how-to book. It's prescriptive nonfiction. It tells you how to build resilience in your organization so that you can anticipate change and decide how you're going to attack it and survive it and be proactive. So it becomes your change. It becomes the organization's proactive change. So suddenly you switch from fighting it to embracing it and shoving it onto other people.
Because it's emanating from you, from the
Right.
organization, and not some external source.
It's a way of learning how to live in a world that's constantly changing.
So then the people, the audience says, oh yeah, man, you're right.
Yeah, they
As
do.
long as I'm in charge, everything's cool.
And of course, then they say, well, how do I do that? That's there you go. There's my opening, right?
So you've opened with that in a presentation. Where do you
Yes.
go from there? Are you teaching the principles in on your book, or have you got something else that you're sharing with this audience, leading them to buy your book?
Well, I have several topics that I talk about. I talk about ethics. I talk about multiple generations in the workforce. And the thing that is my baby, my preferred thing, is what I call business suicide prevention, which is the book, right? So, where I go from there, when that's the topic, of course, I'm speaking to an audience and I've been hired to speak on a topic. So I speak to that topic, but most of the time it has to do with this. And where I go from there is I explain the concept of corporate life cycle theory. And then I explain some of the things we've talked about, but they all want to know what's the answer. Why do businesses fail? And I say there's only three reasons a business fails. And to understand this, you have to understand that organizations exist in one of three states of maturity. Now, bear with me because this is probably all new stuff and it's a little thick, but it's not that complicated. Organizations in youth have narrow and shallow experience. Notice I'm not talking about knowledge. I'm not talking about expertise. I'm not talking about capabilities or skills. I'm talking about experience.
Experience.
Youth, narrow, shallow. Organizations that fail in youth fail because of a lack of clarity of purpose. They try to do everything for everybody. They don't understand their value and they don't understand their market. The next stage is adolescence. Adolescence is narrow and deep experience. We've been doing this a long time. We know a lot about it. We haven't gotten outside our lane very much, but man, do we know our lane inside, outside, and backwards. So why do businesses in the adolescent stage fail? They
So that was,
always
excuse me,
fail.
that was narrow and deep experience.
Yep, that's adolescence. So you go from narrow, shallow to narrow, deep because you've been doing it for a while now. So the longer you do it, the more you find out about it, the deeper you get into the nuts and bolts of it, right? So those organizations always fail for the same reason. There's only one reason, and it's always the same: lack of consistent performance. They can't make commitments that they can live up to consistently. People don't consistently do their job. People don't consistently follow the plan. Expectations are not met. So the third stage of maturity, adulthood, right? We started with narrow, shallow. Then we go to narrow, deep. Now, adulthood, we go to broad and deep experience. So, why do organizations that are in the adulthood stage of maturity fail? Once again, let me say there's only one reason, and it never changes. It's because of a lack of engagement of people. So, what I call this is the three Ps: purpose, performance, people. Why do mature adult businesses fail? Because of a lack of engagement of people.
And what makes that?
Well, you have to understand what engagement means. Engagement means I feel like I'm part of the business and the business is part of me. I feel like a valued component and I understand that I'm just one link in the chain. And no matter where I am in that chain, if I break, the whole chain breaks. So it doesn't matter if I'm a peon or a boss. My role is critical to the success of this organization and I feel it and I'm treated like it. So, when you have that engagement, what happens is you have fluidity of knowledge throughout the organization because everybody understands everybody's role and why they're all important. And everybody understands how to communicate because you can't have that understanding without communication. Now, think about this for a second. If a business that isn't growing is dying, by the time you've reached adulthood, you've grown. Grown how? What do you mean grow, Larry? Well, it could be revenue, it could be profit, it could be employees, it could be customers, it could be sales, could be products, could be services, could be geographic reach, could be market differentiation. It doesn't matter. As long as you're growing in some way, it doesn't matter what the growth is. But as you grow, you increase complexity. And complexity creates the need for rules, right? And rules create the loss of flexibility. And I call that the arc of success. So as you go through this and you grow, the leadership gets further and further from the customer.
Huh.
And what happens in these organizations that die is that because leadership doesn't have that intimacy with the customer, and because staff are not engaged, the customer changes. Remember, the world is always changing, right? So the needs of the customer change, but the value that the company delivers doesn't continue to serve those changing needs. They continue to serve the needs that are no longer there.
Is
And that's what.
the company becoming like too bureaucratic then?
Well,
Kind of.
that's one aspect of it, but look at Sears. Sears is bankrupt.
Yeah.
You know why? Because they never changed their business model. They
Yeah.
kept serving the people that they were serving 50 years ago.
All right.
And eventually all those customers moved on and didn't care about what Sears offered.
Yeah.
So when you have that engagement, what you have is a bridge from the customer to leadership, a living, breathing bridge. Because everybody in the organization is connected to the value they're delivering, which includes the value to the customer. And when they see that value proposition changing, the communication mechanism that's in place in an engaged environment affords everybody in the company to understand those changes are happening, and then leadership can react to them. And this is kind of a PhD level piece of the data doesn't change the reality.
It's part of the picture, part of the downfall. Wow, that's really cool. This is some deep stuff. That's like you say, PhD level stuff. Winding down here a little bit now. What would you be saying to somebody that's watching here? Maybe they're just starting out in business. Maybe they've been around for a while. Other than purchasing your book, good advice right there. What advice would you have? What advice would you have for an individual? A couple of few things that you could just say, well, try this, do this, do this.
So what I would say is that clarity of purpose is the foundation of all organizational success. And clarity of purpose involves three things. Clarity of purpose starts with what is the value we offer? Who is it valuable to, and how do we deliver it? Write that down.
Yep.
Document it.
Yep.
Don't lose sight of it. That is your North Star. That's the first leg of the experience stool, three-legged stool. The
That
second
is,
leg.
yeah, in my world is what problem do you solve and who do you solve it for?
Exactly.
Basically the same thing. Yep.
It's
Deep.
basically the same thing.
Yep.
And then the next leg of the stool is what kind of a culture do we want? There's three types of culture. There's anarchy, there's military, which is command and control, there's rules-based, and there's what Dov Seidman calls the should culture. And the should culture is important because you want everybody to know what they should be doing.
Right.
You don't want people to have to learn a handbook full of rules. When you all are on the same page culturally and you're all pointed in the same direction, then diversity is a blessing because your values are all shared, even though I may be male and you may be female, I may be black and you may be white, I may be from a communist country, you may be from a Buddhist country, you may be from a Muslim country, but we have common shared values
Right.
and we know what we all should be doing. So the second leg is the culture.
What
And
excuse me,
that's
what was the third of those? We got anarchy, military, and third one?
rules-based.
Rules based.
And the last is should. And the
Yeah.
difference, of course, between military and rules is military is this is what you do. Don't argue with me.
That's
Right?
almost anarchy. Well,
Well,
anarchy is no order, isn't it? Never mind. Yeah.
right.
Yeah.
And I will say this, Russ. Every organization must have elements that live in each of those four stages. You can't have any one of them 100% of the time. When the poop hits the fan, people have to scramble and make it work. It has to be anarchy. That's okay under the right circumstances. So let me go back to summarize because I have
Temporarily. Yeah.
exactly. So again, clarity of purpose, value you deliver in the markets, culture you want. And the third thing is, what are we trying to do here? What is our long-term goal? One of my favorite companies, one of my most successful companies, is dedicated to creating educational environments that maximize the power of youth. And I'm being very brief here because I want to be short. I don't want to ramble, but we have people who have been in that company for 30 years and absolutely are so passionate about doing this that they'll do anything. It's the passion of wanting to achieve a goal that's bigger than one single person. Those three things make purpose. Document them and make everything you do conform to those elements of purpose. You will be off on the best start you possibly
Hear
can.
that, folks? On this, you mentioned the 30-year employee. You know, they
Yeah.
get the 30-year watch, but in your experience, do you find them as passionate as somebody that maybe has been around only for a year or two, or has some of that passion waned over the years for one reason or another?
It's a great question. The answer is I find them to be more passionate because they have been in the environment and they understand it better than when they came. When they come on board, they're passionate. I want to do this. I love this. It's a great idea. I want to be part of it. I want to be part of succeeding. And oh my God, I didn't know we were doing that. That's wonderful. And oh my God, I didn't know we were doing that. That's even better than I expected. And oh my God, I'm learning. So they become more passionate. And just for context, this is a company that's been around for a little, about 36 years. Today, we are about, our budget is about $90 million a year, and we have about 430 employees. So it's not a teeny little company, but it's matured and aged over the years. And that company is just as we speak today in the process of transitioning from adolescence into adulthood. It's taken that long,
Wow.
but we're doing it.
Obviously, I've done something right throughout the years too.
Well, there have been
90 million,
mistakes.
not 90 million is not bad on an income statement for sales, is it?
No.
Oh, indeed. All right. So those are the three suggestions, folks. Write those down. Clarity of purpose. What kind of culture do you want in your business?
And be
And what
clear
is the
about the
long-term
value you
goal?
deliver.
You know, you could actually put these into your household too. What's the purpose of your life? What's the purpose of your family? What kind of culture do you want to create in your family? How do you want it to be governed and so on? And then, what is the long-term goal of your life, of your family, folks? So, hey, that's really cool. All right, how can people get your book?
Well, it's pretty easy. I'm all over the internet if you could remember how to spell Mandelberg. But the easier thing is just remember business suicide. Businesses don't fail. You can search that. You can go to businessesdon'tfail.com. The book is all over Amazon, Apple Play, Google Play, iTunes. It's easy to find.
Okay, good deal.
Businesses don't fail. That's all you need to remember.
Besides the book, you're available to speak and to teach and to consult, to coach, or how would a person get a hold of you for any of the above?
Yeah, Russ, right now, most of my time is spent speaking.
Okay.
I'm trying to preach. I have a handful of clients. I take on about one new client a year, but when I take on a client, they usually don't go away. They're always short-term gigs with a specific objective. And then as the business grows and ages, they have a new problem and they say, Larry, we
Oh,
got a
yeah.
new problem.
Right.
So I only take on about one new client a year, and all of my clients are referral, but I am always looking for the opportunity to speak. And I have a lot of programs where I can make that very cost effective. If there are any large groups, I'll usually speak for free if you buy books for your audience. So
Got
I'm
it.
pretty
Okay.
flexible.
All right. And you can be contacted probably through the website.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Businessesdon'tfail.com.
Yes,
Okay,
sir.
great. Do you have a podcast yourself?
No, I don't want to manage a podcast, and managing a podcast usually means having employees, and
It does take time.
I'm
Yep.
not doing that. I don't want any more employees. I sold my last brick and mortar in 2000, and I said I'll never have another employee as long as I live. Remember, Russ, I've never worked for a company that I didn't own. So I've had my share of that stuff.
Yeah,
I'm here to teach now.
but you're part of a 150 year life of business ownership.
Family legacy of business ownership, yes.
So who's going to follow after you in your footsteps when you're finally gone?
I have no idea. I'm not worried
It's
about
gonna,
that.
because without that, it's gonna be gone too, right?
Well, the corporation exists today. I do have some sisters, don't have any children of our own. 43 years, happily married to the same woman. First marriage for both of us. No children by choice. I'm not worried about that.
All right.
My legacy is bringing this knowledge that I've accumulated and disseminated and put into this book. That's my legacy, to help the business community in this country be more successful. If I can do that, that's what more value could I bring?
And at least in the written page, that lasts forever. Yeah. So that you've gone a good direction. I interviewed this woman earlier today, and she said that she wanted to write a book. And she was asking me, well, what do you think I should be doing for this or that? And I says, do the book, because it's going to last forever. You're going to tell your story, and you're going to teach some things and pass on some principles, and it'll last forever. And then I said, well, and I'd like to write a book too. So then she turned that around on me and told me to write a book. So, I guess we're all going to be at the typewriter.
Well, one other thing, Russ, don't forget about this one. Writing a book, you also learn a lot.
That's true. And you don't, well, you learn a lot by teaching somebody else. And that's
That's
what you're
right.
doing in the book, is teaching somebody else. I got to let you go, but it's been a blast, Larry. I'm glad we worked it out, even though we got started a little late. It's definitely worth the wait on my end, and it was good meeting you in person online, all the way from Sacramento area, California, almost diagonal across from where I am. But we'll let you go, folks. Thanks for tuning in.
Thank
Here's
you,
another
Russ.
genius in business that had a lot of advice, a lot of story to tell, background, explanation for what he's about, what he's done, and tips for what you should be doing to improve your situation in life, in career, business, everything. It's funny how all this works together, and for us in our lives. So we'll let you go, folks. We'll tune in to seeing you next time. And I thank you. Over and out from Money Talks. All right, bye bye. Hi, thanks for being here today for another episode of Money Talks. I hope it was informative and encouraging to you. If it struck a chord in your heart, or if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. Visit us at rstcoachingacademy.com. Call 386-286-2450, or send an email to email@rstcoachingacademy. Thanks again, and until next time, be great.